Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Steve Vaughn, also with me, just a couple of homeschooling dads trying to determine the times, the signs of the times, and as the men of Issachar understood the times, that they would know what to do. So we come back to economics as well. We want to monitor economics. I told somebody, it seems to me we're in the eye of the storm, but it's the biggest eye I've ever been in. There's a quietude about our current situation, and yet we are surrounded by storms, and I'm not sure that people are aware of it. We've got just enough padding by quantitative easing and all of these wonderful government handouts that's keeping everybody happy for the time being. And real estate's doing wonderful. Unemployment is better than it used to be. And so everybody's feeling very, very well, thank you very much, about our current situation. But to me, I think we are something in the eye of the storm. And it's a big eye, so it's going to be a while as we work through this particular mother of all storms. And I also want to push for honest indicators. For example, just came upon a statistic in which somebody identified the number of hours it takes to purchase a home today as compared to 1970. And it turns out we work double the hours to pay off a home today as the average person would work in 1970. And that despite the improvement upon technologies, the improvement upon manufacturing technologies that have enabled us to purchase our food, our cars, and everything else for a reasonable amount of money. You've got, of course, nail guns and the technology of nail guns that should improve the efficiency of putting a house together in the present day. But then it turns out houses are also somewhat larger. As it turns out, we actually are working about the same amount of hours in the present day to pay off a house that would be equal in square footage to what it would have been in 1970. So it would be about equal, but that despite the fact that we're in way more debt today overall, and despite the fact that we have vastly improved efficiency in manufacturing technologies and such. All right, so that's where we are in terms of houses, purchasing homes in the present day. But again, pushing for honest indicators, we do the best that we can to identify an honest view of where we are. We like to look at the amount of government spending per GDP, which crossed over the 50% mark just last year. If you add up all of governments, local, state, and federal, divide it by the GDP for the year, you're going to find that America crossed over the 50% mark for the first time in American history. And so that's interesting. That means that governments now play a larger part in our life than all other institutions, family, church, you name it. The government is the largest institution in the country. And governments are now close to totalitarian. That is, they now control more of your life than you control. And they now are able to, I think, take the open check and create the totalitarian world that the humanist governments have been striving for 9 to 150 years, roughly since Karl Marx espoused the idea that governments should control all of our economy and all of life. Well, that's where we are today, my friends. For the first time under the Trump administration, we crossed the boundary to the 50 percentile mark. And typically it's the Republicans that gain ground when it comes to government spending per the GDP, and it's the Democrats that retain it and maintain it, and that's exactly what the Biden administration is doing this year. In 1929 also, this is very important from the Mises Institute, the federal government was spending 35% of total government spending in America. That is, the federal government was only consuming or spending or controlling 35% of the total government expenditures in America, which means that America had a fairly decent decentralization of government control of our lives. That is, the control of our lives as far as governments were in control was fairly decentralized. Now, again, remember that governments in total were only spending somewhere around 6 to 8 to 10% of the GDP in the early decades of the 20th century. And of that, the federal government only had control of 35% of it. All right. So not only did you have small governments in America in 1929, but you had a decentralized federal government that popped up to 40-50% in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. And then between 1973 and 2001, the federal government flatlined at about 60% of total government funding in America. All right. Now, between 2001 and especially since 2019 and the present, the number has increased to 70%. So that's where we are today. 70% of the total government spending in America consumed and spent by or controlled by the federal government, which means America has one of the most centralized, most controlling, and most enriched federal governments in the world. So,
and they want more.
And they want more. Yeah, they're not content with what they have. So we're kind of hoping for a decentralized system, Steve.
Yeah. And, you know, I think God is, you know, if you look at the Bible, God is decentralized. Man is supposed to be able to do with his property and with his money what he wants to do, that as seen in the parable of the day workers, when at the end of the day, he paid everybody the same. And he said, do I not have the ability to do with my money what I want to do with my money? And the government is saying, no, we should have the ability to do with your money what we want to do with your money. This whole massive redistribution of wealth where they're paying people more not to work, which is why we're having this unemployment issues, why the we're running out of gas at the gas stations. It's not that we are out of gas. It's nobody is wanting to drive the gas to the gas stations because they can make more money sitting at home. And so there's big issues going on right now. And if they're making more money sitting at home, that means the government is taking the money from the people who are working and giving money to people who aren't working.
The federal government controlling something like 35% of the national income, and of course, governments now over 50% of the incomes at local, state, and federal levels. And as Ray Stevens put it, not exactly the scriptural authority of all authorities, but Ray Stevens, the funny man songwriter, if 10% is good enough for Jesus, it ought to be good enough for Uncle Sam. I should play that on air sometime if I get access to it. But you do search on the internet for that little song from Ray Stevens. If 10% is good enough for Jesus, it ought to be good enough for Uncle Sam. And of course, 1 Samuel chapter 8 is very clear. So a biblical worldview is very clear on this one, and that is that governments should never take more than 10% of the people's income. Otherwise, it would be a complete and horrible tyranny. And so if you're to construct a terrible tyranny over a society, it's going to have to happen by a democracy voting it upon itself. And that's what's happened in the insanity of democracy since the early part of the 1900s. And so 1 Samuel chapter 8, very clear that the demand of a king, the demand of a government for oneself, the warning is given in no uncertain terms by God himself through the prophet Samuel that this king will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage and give it to his officers. He will take a tenth of your sheep and you will be his servants and you will cry out in that day because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves. The Lord will not hear you in that day. So very plainly, anything above 10%, anything above what God demands as a tithe, is really the government effectively attempting to be God and to be far more tyrannical than God would be. Certainly, my friends, this is the definition of tyranny, and we've got it here fivefold in America right now. This is Kevin Swanson. We'll be back in just a moment.
Attention, homeschool parents. Here at Generations, we know that finding literature curriculum that engages your children's minds and helps them develop a strong Christian worldview can be an overwhelming task. That's why we've developed a Christian discipleship-focused literature curriculum that's centered around the most important work of literature ever written, the Word of God. Not only do our Bible-centric courses seek to place Christ at the head of literature studies, but they will also teach your children how to analyze all literature from a Christian perspective, enabling them to be more than conquerors in today's battle of worldviews. By introducing them to the essential stories of the faith, along with the written works of history's best Christian authors, our literature curriculum provides the bedrock for a firm foundation of faith in the hearts of your children. So, get started today with Generations Christian Discipleship Curriculum and watch your children embark on an incredible journey towards strengthening their faith and discovering the greatest Christian stories ever told. You can learn more and browse our selection of carefully curated works at generations.org/curriculum. That's generations.org/curriculum.
And we're back on the Generations broadcast as we take a look at some of the economic indices that are important. And friends, we want an honest reflection of what's going on right now in our economy. And Steve, I think we're seeing something of a destabilization on a number of accounts. One is, of course, governments are taking control of the economy, and that means, of course, massive inefficiencies. If you have governments taking that much of the economy and controlling that much of the economy, then private enterprise is not going to be controlling any part of that 50%. The results of large government stimulus also over the last 10 years have been devastating to the middle class. The middle class of any society is really the class that maintains something of an upward mobility and an economic stability for the masses. And sadly, the quantitative easing and the government stimulus plans have done immeasurable evil to the American economy. The middle class disappearing with a shift of wealth into the top 1%. Financial assets held by the lower 50% of Americans went from $1 trillion to $2 trillion between 1990 and 2020 over a 30-year period. Meanwhile, the financial assets held by the top 1% of Americans went from $4 trillion to $40 trillion from 1990 to 2020, which means what? The ratio went from roughly a 4X to a 20X between 1990 and 2020. And that, my friends, is a massive wealth shift that came mostly in the last 10 years by the quantitative easing or the printing of money or the issuing of money on the part of the Federal Reserve since 2010. So that is the devastation that's come about in the American economy in just the last 10 years. Also, be aware the stock market is rumbling and rumbling and rumbling. Keep in mind that the price-to-earnings ratio for the S&P, we monitor this on a regular basis. We monitor the rumblings. We monitor the earthquake rumblings that are occurring on the massive scale on the stock market in America by monitoring the price-to-earnings ratio, which means that Americans are acting more out of greed. They're more interested in the price of the stock than the earnings of the stock. And the price-to-earnings ratio on the stock market is now at 45.6, up from 44 6 weeks ago. Now, we update you on this on a regular basis because we want effectively to work a countdown as this whole thing comes down, as the whole economy crashes. We want to be sure that somebody has issued something of a countdown. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody went, you know, did the 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1? And that's what I've been doing for roughly the last year, but really the last 6 months in earnest. I've been doing the best I can to monitor the PDE so that everybody has an update on what's going on. I want to be sure that at least the several thousand people that tune into this radio program are well aware of what is happening with the macro economy in America. Friends, we're now at a 45.6, up from 44 just a month ago. So again, the price to earnings ratio for the S&P is now at 45.6, up from 44 just a month ago, and up from 22.8 a year ago. That's about double what it was a year ago, which means what? Which means the last recession, the price-to-earnings ratio typically goes around 12 to 13 to 14 to 15, right in there. That's where the price-to-earnings ratio is in a healthy economy. When recessions kick in, it's usually at 22 to 26. And the last recession in 2008 kicked in when the price-to-earnings hit 26. And now we are at 46. So, friends, that's the mother of all storms coming quickly. You're looking at a massive correction. I'm going to suggest anywhere between a 70 and 80% correction on the American stock market sometime soon. At least if you follow the price to earnings ratio and where it should be. That is, if there was any interest in productivity, that people are actually interested in markets producing stuff. They're not interested in markets producing stuff. Now it's just, well, put it all on the 7 and let the roulette wheel go. They're putting it all in the 7 or the 9 or the 12. That's where it is right now. We're effectively hanging out in a casino in Las Vegas at this point when it comes to the stock market. It's not about the productivity. It's not about the earnings anymore because nobody cares about that. It's all about making a buck, a quick buck on the stock value. That's where things are now with the price to earnings ratio, the greed ratio, as high as 46. Typically, again, in healthy markets, it ranges between 12 and 16. And when recessions kick off, you're typically around 26. Now we've reached 46. So tick, 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 tick. The bomb is about ready to go off. I just don't know how high it can go. How high can you go, Steve? How high can you go? I don't know. I just don't know.
It's kind of like how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll? The world may never know until it happens. And then when it happens, we'll go, oh, so it was 47.
47, yeah. 47, maybe 48, maybe 52. I don't know how high you can go before the whole thing blows. I just don't know. But I do know that it's about as high as it's ever been in history. Okay, friends, now there are so many other indicators that this thing's out of control. We've talked about the non-fungible tokens, which are supposed to facilitate an immutable transfer of ownership for a digital file. Beeple, a digital artist, sold a collage of his art for $69.3 million just a few months ago. It's the third most expensive piece of art ever sold by a living artist, and it isn't even tangible. You're just buying zeros and ones.
Yeah.
That's all you're buying. And that's pretty much what's happening with the market right now. That's just an indication of the massive instability of the market. Now, Facebook also just touched over $1 trillion in value by its stocks. And again, remember, friends, your price to earnings is outrageous at this point. But Facebook is now reportedly worth $1 trillion. Google is at $1.7 million. Amazon is at $1.74 trillion. Microsoft is at $2 trillion. And Apple is number one, the most valued company in America at $2.25 trillion. Now, be aware, my friends, these are not corporations that make cars, refrigerators, produce electricity, do useful things. This is not agriculture. This isn't food. This isn't utilities. This is not cars and automobiles. These companies are largely fluff. The richest country companies in America are basically fluff. Facebook, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple. Google and Facebook, what, worth $1 trillion now and $1.7 trillion? They don't really do anything. They're just largely counterproductive. Google is what, a search engine?
Yeah.
That's a nothing. There are 15 search engines. There could be hundreds of search engines easily. Google is a nothing. Nothing is worth $1.7 trillion. Facebook is nothing. What is Facebook? A gossip column. That's basically it. And there are 30 to 40 competitors that could take their place in an instant. Yeah, I know they feel like they're very, very powerful and everything, and they feel like they're going to exist forever and ever. No. They're about the most unstable domino in the history of dominoes. So people need to understand, Google and Facebook, the number four, number five richest companies in America, just fluff. And what's Microsoft? Microsoft, what is it? They make cars? They make food? They make machines? No. It's software. It's an operating system. Anybody can make an operating system. Anybody can build a word processor. It's a joke. Microsoft is a joke. It's a nothing. Apple builds computers. Thousands of companies can build computers. My buddy in college was building computers and I was selling them. I had a friend who's building a computer. Anybody can build a computer. I mean, come on. Amazon's a monopoly. Amazon is as fluffy as you can get. Amazon is built on debt. It's got a debt to equity of 3.02. That compares to an average retail debt to equity, at least up to 5 years ago, that was at 0.68. In stable markets, you're not going to survive beyond a debt to equity of 1.0. By the way, a lot of retail now is upwards of 1 to 1.6, but Amazon is twice that. Amazon is
has outrageous debt. It's one of the most unstable companies in the history of companies. Amazon is a house of cards. So, friends, you need to understand that we live in unstable times. The richest companies in America, they're just fluff. And I think the sooner our IT friends wake up and realize these big companies are just fluff, I think we're going to be in a better condition. At least we're going to be in better touch with reality. And here's one more indication of the fluffiness and the instability. Jeff Bezos just got divorced. He's the CEO of one of the largest companies in the world, the third largest company in the world, $1.7 trillion. He's the founder and CEO of this thing, and he just got divorced. That just shows you these guys are flakes. Bill Gates just got divorced. He's the Microsoft guy. Elon Musk, he's supposed to be this big and wonderful guy. He's never been married. Tim Cook, Apple CEO, just came out as a homosexual. You really think these companies are built on substance? You really think these companies are going to survive? These are some of the most unstable people in the history of mankind. You know, we did a short bit on this when Bill Gates announced his divorce. And we looked at the most powerful people in the world, according to Forbes magazine. Xi Jinping is one of the most powerful persons in the world. He's president of China, or the prime minister of China. He's divorced. Vladimir Putin, he's divorced. Donald Trump's divorced. Angela Merkel's divorced. Boris Johnson, he's been hanging out with girlfriends for a long time. Is he married yet? Maybe he was married just last week. I can't remember. Jeff Bezos, divorced in 2019. Bill Gates, divorced in 2021. These were the most powerful people in the world, according to Forbes magazine. You compare that to the most powerful people in the world in the 1970s, 1972, 1973. Nixon, married. Never got divorced. Brezhnev, married. Didn't get divorced. Harold Wilson, the prime minister of England. He was married. One wife, all the way to the end of his life. The French president wasn't divorced either. So none of the most powerful people in the world were divorced in 1970. Now, all of the most powerful people in the world, with the exception of Pope Francis, are divorced in the present day. We're looking at a massive, worldwide, unstable condition, my friends. The companies, the largest companies in the world, the richest companies in the world, are some of the most unstable companies in the world. The richest people, the most powerful people in the world, the most unstable people in the world. What are we looking at? Here's what we're looking at. This, Steve, I think the bottom line is we are looking at a society that has abandoned wisdom. They have abandoned Proverbs 1:7. They have abandoned the possibility of God's existence. They've abandoned that the beginning of wisdom and knowledge is the fear of God. We've seen this in the corporations. We've seen it in the largest universities and the brightest, most important, most influential educational institutions in the world. We've seen it amongst the most powerful political figures in the world. We've seen it in every aspect of society. Man has turned away from God. He has denied that God exists, and he refuses to fear God or to admit that the beginning of wisdom and knowledge is the fear of God in his educational institutions, and the end result is going to be a massive unraveling of human civilization. I can't think of any other possibility unless there's, I guess, some kind of a revival or a reformation of biblical truth in the minds and the lives of these leaders.
It reminds me of what qualifies you as an elder for the church, where it says, if you can't even keep your own house in order, how do you expect to keep any other house in order? So with these guys, their families and their relationships falling apart, that's what businesses are. Businesses are relationships. If you can't maintain a relationship with your spouse, how can you expect to run a huge corporation? I think you're right. These things are about ready to fall apart.
So what is the root cause of the unraveling of entire economies and the breakdown of Western civilization? Friends, at the root cause is they've abandoned the fear of God, the reverence of God, the recognition of the awesomeness of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. That's it. And the root cause of the breakdown of marriages, the root cause of the entire homosexual revolution and everything else is a selfishness, a self-centeredness, an existentialism. This, of course, is the root of all the birth implosions as well. The root cause is really sin. The root cause is greed. The root cause is wanting to get rich quick. The root cause is power. the seeking of power and powerful governments wishing to tyrannize the people. These are the root causes. The root causes are a sinful mindset, a sinful life, a self-centered idolatry. This is the thing that's breaking the world down. Now, what should governments do? Governments should repent of being God and return to the biblical purpose for government. That isn't manipulating economies, but that is to punish evildoers, people who rob banks and kill people. And by the way, that also includes protecting the young from abortion. So what should governments do? Humble themselves, declare a day of prayer and fasting, stop spending more money, stop going into more debt, let the unemployment rate go to 50%, 70%, 80%. Let the markets crash. Let the price-to-earnings ratio drop back to 10. Stop trying to prop up a dead and dying economy with more debt and encourage churches to take care of the poor. Or, if governments don't do this, the crash will be 100 times worse in the next 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years. Now, what should we do? Well, we should all repent of materialism and greed and self-orientation. We should lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven. Those should be our ultimate values. We should worship God, not worship ourselves. We should be grateful. Be grateful. Count our blessings. During downturns, let's commit to being exceedingly grateful, as in even more grateful. And let him that stole steal no more, but let him work with his hands, that he may give to him who has nothing. Let's give to the persecuted church. Let's give to impoverished churches around the world, like Nepal or Niger or Myanmar, Uganda. That's what we did last year. We're doing the same thing this year. And here's one more thing for the individual to do in the current milieu. Serve others. Lay down your life for others. You can serve in the church. You can serve in the family. Either way, but serve others. 95% of Americans 25 to 29 years of age have had sex. But only 50% are married at 30 years of age. What's up with that? 80% are hooked on pornography. That means they're living a self-centered, selfish life. Sinning against God, not preparing for marriage, not doing what it takes to be self-controlled and giving up of one's self for others and saving for a future marriage and preparing for marriage and preparing to lay down one's life for one's own spouse and kids and the next generation. No, they're not doing that at all. Just entertaining themselves to death. We need to commit to the local church to build the diaconate, and we need to get out of debt ourselves and avoid debt as much as possible. One of the questions that I've asked young people is, you know, what can you do right now to prepare for marriage? What if a 15-year-old boy got a vision for life, for a family, for the kingdom of God, decided he would dedicate 20 hours a week, the 20 hours a week he would put into games? What if he said, for those 20 hours a week, from 15 to 25 years of age, I'm going to dedicate it to a job at Subway, making sandwiches, and I'll save every dime of it. Now, he'll spend the other 75 hours of waking time volunteering for ministries, preparing his educational situation, and doing other things. But 20 hours a week he's going to dedicate to a job at a Subway, and he's going to save every dime of it. My calculation, after 10 years of that, he can pay off the average small house in America by the time he's 25 years of age. Debt-free. And that's just dedicating his playtime, 20 hours of playtime per week, to a part-time job at Subway for 10 years. By the time he's 25 years of age, he gets a vision at 15 years of age. By the time he's 25 years of age, he's got a house paid off. And that doesn't even count, you know, all of his education, all the prep he's done for his career and other aspects of his life. Well, that's just one example I've given. I mean, it'd be amazing if a 15-year-old got a vision for life. That would be amazing. But I'd like to provide these examples. Again, not telling every young person to go out and work for Subway. Work for Chick-fil-A if you want. But I'm just saying, friends, there are micro examples in which we can live a different life than the life that is imposed upon us by the systems. Our institutions are all bound up in self-centeredness, materialism, greed, and institutionalized debt, and living life today to the maximum, spending all of the inheritance of previous generations and spending the future generations into tens of trillions of dollars of debt. That's the mindset of the modern age. But as Christians, let's do just the opposite. Let's deny ourselves, take up the cross daily, and follow Jesus in whatever path he lays out for us. Because each path is going to be different. You're not going to deny yourself and take up the cross the same way I do. But we all have the same marching orders. Deny yourself, take up the cross daily, and follow Jesus. That's the call, my friends. Well, let me wrap this up with an encouragement to grab a copy of Family Life, which presents something of a vision for our young men and young women, something of a different vision for the way that we handle the family economy, the way we handle life as Christians. It's very, very different than how the world does it. And you can read of it in my little book, Family Life, available at our website, generations.org or kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson and Steve Vaughn, and we invite you back again next time. We continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.